Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett. Tonight on PBS News Weekend, our weekend briefing with the latest legal jeopardy facing former President Trump and President Biden's latest legislative wins. Then hot water, a closer look at the effect of marine heat waves like the one driving up temperatures in the Mediterranean Sea. And our weekend spotlight, Abby Jacobson on her reboot of A League of Their Own, 30 years after the classic movie brought the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League to life.
The more we researched, the more we found that this All-American Girls Professional Baseball League was this really incredible time for a lot of queer women that thought they were the only one.
All that and the day's headlines on tonight's PBS News Weekend. Good evening. It's great to be with you. And we begin tonight with our weekend briefing. We now know the Department of Justice is investigating former President Trump for potentially violating the Espionage Act, among other laws, after recovering highly classified government documents from his Mar-a-Lago estate. Meantime, President Biden and congressional Democrats are celebrating another landmark legislative victory after passing a massive climate, health care, and tax bill that President Biden is set to sign into law this coming week. Here to talk about that and more is special correspondent Jeff Greenfield. Jeff, it's great to have you back with us. And let's start with the case at Mar-a-Lago, because today you have Trump allies. They're now pushing this claim that the documents retrieved from Mar-a-Lago were not classified, that Donald Trump verbally declassified them, except that, one, that's not how the process works, the declassification process works, and two, it doesn't matter. The FBI search warrant listed three statutes that make the violations a crime regardless of whether or not the materials are classified. So what's your assessment of what we know and what we don't know about this case?
What we don't know, because we're not seeing the affidavit in support of the search, is what specifically are they concerned about? They talk about documents related to nuclear weapons. That can mean all sorts of things, from the relatively innocent to the really serious potential breach of security at the highest level. When they talk about referencing a criminal statute that talks about taking documents to obstruct justice, are they talking about an attempt to cover up something? We don't know. What we do know, to be blunt, is that the various explanations that Trump and his allies have given keep changing. First, well, maybe the FBI was going to plant evidence. That seemed a little unlikely. Then, as you pointed out, no problem. He can declassify anything with a wave of his hand. Well, no, he can't. And as you pointed out, the statutes in question don't talk about classified documents. The last point I would make is Trump said at one point, we've given them everything they wanted. Well, the New York Times reported not exactly. One of Trump's lawyers had signed a statement saying, you now have everything that we can find that's classified. And the reason for the search warrant at Trump's property was the authorities were convinced, with good reason, it turns out, that not everything had been turned over. So we're still kind of on a darkling plane about the specifics. But what we know raises some eyebrows and some pretty serious questions.
Meantime, Donald Trump's standing, his political standing, had been slipping among younger and college-educated Republicans. One of the key questions now is, will the Republican Party continue to circle the wagons and stick by him, even as the picture potentially gets worse, not just with this case involving Mar-a-Lago, but you have civil action in New York and then the criminal probe in Georgia?
I think the answer to your question for now lies in the primaries. People were saying, well, Trump's standing in the party has started to slip. With the exception of a few races in Georgia, almost every target Trump aimed his anger at has gone down to defeat, often against people with very thin credentials other than that Trump supported him. So when this story broke, the first reaction of virtually every Republican, not just the MAGA zealots, but the office holders, was, as you put it, to circle the wagons and say everything from this is an outrage to defund the FBI, which I have to admit caused a certain amount of chuckle, since the Republicans were planning to make crime and their support for law enforcement a key to the midterms.
Speaking of the midterms, this was a big week for President Biden. Another legislative win, health care, climate deficit reduction that was included in the Inflation Reduction Act. You see the totality of his legislative successes over the past year and a half. Gas prices are coming down. His approval rating is ticking up. White House officials tell me that they're going to hit the road over the coming weeks, and they're going to try to paint Republicans as stewards of special interests who are pursuing what they call an extreme MAGA agenda. Will that be an effective approach, do you think?
The first thing to be said is that the Trump story was not what the White House would have wanted. A day after the Lower Inflation Act was passed, the day after this pretty impressive record, after a long string of defeats or not getting things done, was about to be celebrated by the White House, Trump, as he has so often done, sucked all the oxygen out of the room. You know, Democrats have been arguing for a long time that Republicans are the party of special interests, and that whether that political argument works really depends on facts on the ground. I think of all the things that the Democrats have done, passing a bill that will get the government to regulate drug prices, even though that's a couple of years away, is to me the most effective argument, saying this is the most serious economic issue we could deal with, and every Republican voted against us. That's what I think might be effective. The other thing that needs to be said is gas prices are not in control of Biden. He didn't deserve the blame when they went up. He doesn't deserve the credit now that they're going down, and they may be going up again by November.
Wyoming has a primary on Tuesday. Congresswoman Liz Cheney is likely on her way to a major defeat, given her role in trying to hold Donald Trump to account for inciting the Capitol insurrection. There are lots of Americans, Republicans and Democrats, who really, I think, long for the days of the Republican Party that Liz Cheney represents. What's her next act, as you see it?
The idea that Liz Cheney represents a kind of moderate Republican, that just doesn't fit the history. What she is a very conservative Republican who was repelled by what Trump did when he lost the election. I think she will be a star on cable television. Whether I think she has a future in the Republican Party, my answer to that is not very likely.
Special correspondent Jeff Greenfield, thanks as always for your insights. Great to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
And in the day's other headlines, federal authorities are warning of an unprecedented number of threats to law enforcement officials following the FBI search of former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. In an unclassified joint intelligence bulletin confirmed by PBS NewsHour, the FBI and Department of Homeland Security say they have, quote, observed an increase in violent threats posted on social media against federal officials and facilities, including a threat to place a so-called dirty bomb in front of FBI headquarters and issuing general calls for civil war and armed rebellion. It calls on officials to be vigilant. Outside the U.S. Capitol building early this morning, a man crashed his car into a barricade and died in an apparent suicide. Our Lisa Desjardins was first to report on the incident. Capitol Police say that as the man got out of his car, it was engulfed in flames. He then fired a gun into the air and shot himself as officers approached him. That's according to the police account. No one else was hurt. Police are investigating, but said it does not appear he was targeting any members of Congress. Overseas, a Palestinian gunman opened fire on a bus near Jerusalem's Old City, injuring 8 people. 2 of the victims are in serious condition, including a pregnant woman and a man with gunshot wounds to his head and neck. The U.S. ambassador to Israel said American citizens were among the wounded. The suspected attacker later turned himself in. Palestinian militant factions in Gaza praised the attack, but there was no immediate claim of responsibility. And author Salman Rushdie is on the road to recovery, according to his literary agent. His condition is still critical, but he's been taken off a ventilator. The 75-year-old was stabbed 10 to 15 times while on stage while giving a lecture in Western New York on Friday. The suspect in the attack has pleaded not guilty to attempted murder and assault charges, and investigators are searching for a motive. And in Oslo, Norway, a walrus named Freya that gained international attention for her playful antics was euthanized today by Norwegian authorities. The 1,300-pound walrus became a popular attraction as she made her way around small boats in the harbor, drawing crowds. Authorities warned people to stay away and hoped that she would leave on her own, but ultimately they say that they believed she posed a risk to humans. And still to come on PBS News Weekend, record temperatures in the Mediterranean Sea draw attention to damaging marine heat waves. And our weekend spotlight with Abby Jacobson, co-creator and star of the new series, A League of Their Own.
This is PBS News Weekend from WETA Studios in Washington, home of the PBS NewsHour, weeknights on PBS.
This summer has seen record-high temperatures around the world, but the damaging effects from the heat do not stop at the water's edge. In Europe, heat waves on land have led to heat waves in the water. My colleague Ali Rogan has more on this phenomenon, which has existed for decades, but is only now gaining widespread attention.
Marine heat waves occur when ocean temperatures are higher than usual for at least 5 days. The Mediterranean Sea has been experiencing one since May, with temperatures 5 to 9 degrees Fahrenheit higher than normal. That might not sound like a lot, but it's deadly for the delicate ecosystems that populate the sea. And experts predict there will be more damage before the summer is over. For more on these marine heat waves, I'm joined by Michael Jaycox. He's a research oceanographer with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. What's causing these marine heat waves?
Well, marine heat waves can be driven by a number of different things. Changes in the atmosphere, different weather systems. You can get a high pressure system in the atmosphere that reduces winds and mixing in the ocean, for example. So they do occur naturally. And can happen for a number of different reasons.
But part of this is because the oceans themselves are getting warmer, right? So the conditions that have existed for a long time in terms of those weather systems are getting exacerbated by the fact that the oceans are simply getting hotter. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So you've got, even if these things happen naturally, you now have them occurring on the backdrop of a warmer ocean. So if the ocean warms by 1 degree, then, you know, a 3 degree heat wave is now 4 degrees. And you've got this compounding effect that really amplifies the impacts of the heat waves.
Right. And so it becomes more palpable with every season. So to that point, when did the scientific community kind of become aware that this was a phenomenon that needed its own level of study and also needed its own name, needed its own terminology?
Yeah, the marine heat wave terminology really came around about a decade ago now. The sort of warm ocean temperatures have been studied in different forms for many decades. But some prominent events in the past decade, I think largely driven by the heat waves on top of the long-term warming, have motivated a whole lot more study on these events.
Absolutely. And these heat waves last a lot longer than heat waves on land, right?
Yeah, that's right. Things in the ocean just evolve slower than they do in the atmosphere. So you can have events that last for anywhere from weeks to even years in some cases in the ocean.
Wow. And what kind of damage have you been seeing that these heat waves do to the marine life that requires these, you know, very specific kind of temperatures to have a prosperous ecosystem?
Yeah, so there's a wide range of impacts that have been observed. You can think of things like mortality and bleaching of corals, changes in the availability of food for different species, which impacts their mortality, their survival, their reproduction. These heat waves have been associated with blooms of toxic algae, which can poison animals and make seafood unfit for human consumption. And also they've caused just distribution shifts where marine species there's these heat waves that come along and they look for favorable conditions elsewhere, and they can be found thousands of kilometers away from where you normally expect them.
And do you expect dynamics like that to continue? I mean, we're seeing temperatures rising all over the world with no sign of regression. Is that going to be the case with marine heat waves?
Yeah, certainly. You know, there's these long-term trends, and on top of this, we're going to have the natural variability. So we should certainly expect to see more of these impacts in the future.
Very sobering stuff. Michael Jaycox with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Ali.
The film A League of Their Own quickly became a cult classic after its initial release in 1992. The The movie, directed by the late Penny Marshall, was based on the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League that started in 1943. With thousands of American men serving overseas in World War II, women quite literally stepped up to the plate, and as a result, widened the horizons for generations of young girls. Now, 30 years after the film premiered in theaters, the Rockford Peaches are coming back to our screens. Joining us now is Abby Jacobson, the co-creator and star of the new Prime Video series, A League of Their Own. It's great to have you with us.
Oh my goodness, thank you so much for having me. What a pleasure.
Yeah, and you have said that this new series, it's not a remake, it's more a reimagining of that 1992 film. Why reimagine this particular story?
Yeah, so I mean, I grew up with this film. I love this film, and it was so impactful for me as I was a very sporty kid, very athletic. You know, when Will Graham, who co-created this with me, he approached me with this project in 2017, and we both bonded so much over our love of the film, but also, if we were going to do this, it does not need to be remade. Penny Marshall hinted at a lot of things in the film version that we are really leaning into. And the more we researched, the more we found that this All-American Girls Professional Baseball League was this really incredible time for a lot of queer women that thought they were the only one. They ended up finding each other through this league. And so that was one of the things that we felt like we really wanted to explore. And then also, if you remember, there's an iconic scene in the film where a black woman picks up a foul ball and chucks it back to Gina Davis.
Right.
And whoa, if you blink, you miss this scene. And Penny is alluding to the fact that that league was segregated. Black women and women of color were not allowed to try out. So what happens when this league is this incredible opportunity for white women and white passing women to get to play baseball? And it's also a door that closes for women of color. Those are stories that people need to know about. It's baseball. It's American baseball history.
Yeah.
So it's very exciting.
The idea to uplift stories and perspectives in your series that the original movie didn't necessarily touch, was that intentional, or was that something that you happened upon in the past half decade of research that you've been doing where you thought that this really needs to be elevated?
Making something in 92, there's a lot of limitations to the kind of stories that you were able to tell. Now we knew we wanted to have our own take on this league in this time and this generation of ball players. And also, the more we dived into the research, the more we're just like, these are stories that are fascinating to us. We think they'll be fascinating to audiences.
You and your co-creator had a chance to speak with Penny Marshall shortly before she passed away about this project. What did she tell you?
We needed her to know how much we love the film and that we were, as I'm saying, not trying to remake it, and just why we were reapproaching it and what our goal was in doing this again. And she seemed really excited and told us a lot about what it was like to make the film, and also how, you know, she felt like she couldn't tell all the stories and she wished she could. So she, you know, she told Will and I, you know, go do it already. And she was really excited. She also told us that when she made this film, the real women behind the film, their stories changed her life. And she said to us, I think they'll change yours too. And they really, really have.
There are parallels, as I understand it, between your life and the life of the character you play, Carson Shaw. Give us a sense of that, that's sort of the mirror image such that it exists.
I came to know myself and my sexuality pretty late in life. And that's definitely a big part of Carson's journey on the show. And I think also there's like a big meta experience for me in being one of the leaders of the show and playing a character who becomes sort of a de facto leader of the Peaches and a very unlikely one. And that's something I'm really excited to portray in a character, someone who's kind of messy and insecure and isn't the person that you might think should lead at first. But the more she knows herself and the more she gets to know herself throughout the season, the more she finds her voice and her confidence and becomes a really great leader.
You mentioned that as a kid you were athletic. Did you play baseball or softball? I mean, what was the training like? Can't imagine that you used a lot of stand-ins. It didn't look like it from watching the series.
Well, that's good to hear. yes, I played softball as a kid, but I mean, I haven't played in a long time. And yes, we had a lot of training. And so we did a 3-week training camp in Los Angeles before we shot the series. And basically, it was all of us all day. You know, you had little sectioned off position training, going through all the dynamics of what it looks to be a player, what it feels like, all the different drills. And we were coached by, our main coach was Justine Siegel, who is actually the first woman to be staffed in MLB coaching position. And all the rest of the trainers were other women and people who are a part of her Baseball for All organization. It was so incredible because all our trainers were basically the modern day version of the women that we were playing on screen. So it was so cool to really be around real players and get to hang out with them all day. Mm-hmm. Everyone got better, but we did have doubles.
How has this process changed you? How has it changed your outlook, your perspective? Not just starring in a series like this, but actually creating it, producing it, during a pandemic, no less.
Yeah, you know, I think my career up to this point has mostly been Broad City, which was a show that is near and dear to my heart. And I had a lot of the same roles on that show. But embarking on this in scope and in size, and it's just a very grand period piece show. So that was very different. But I feel a great honor and responsibility in making sure that those experiences feel as truthful and as expansive and joyful and nuanced as they can be. And the most powerful thing I feel is really proud of putting these characters out into the world. I hope people feel like they see themselves in someone on the show. And that's exciting to me.
Well, that sense of pride you feel, I have to say, is well-deserved. So Abby Jacobson, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And that is our program for tonight. I'm Jeff Bennett. For all of us at PBS News Weekend, thanks for spending part of your Sunday with us. Have a great week.